This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. On Thursday, I'm very happy to remind you that Bill Larson, the writer's legal eagle, will be in the studio with me to answer your questions. So if you have a question, send it in to me at patsy.radio@gmail, and Bill will answer your questions. Oh, I'm so happy now to go to my guest, who is up in Maine, and I always wonder what's going on up there in Maine. How is the weather? And we'll ask her today. RJ Keller. Hi, RJ.
Hi.
Are you there?
I am.
Okay, what do I call you? RJ? That's what you like?
Yeah, RJ's fine.
Okay, RJ. Well, you know, it's really nice. How's the weather up there?
It's actually very hot up here. It's in the 90s, and it's humid.
Oh,
and
wow. Okay.
I don't like it.
You know, somehow Maine always seems, you know, for somebody in Florida, Maine seems so far away and so far up north. And so I'm in the studio, and it's freezing in here, and I was thinking, oh, this is Maine weather, but it doesn't look like it, huh?
Nope, not at this time. Maybe, you know, come October, then, you know, we'll be down to that.
Okay. Well, it's really wonderful to talk to you because you are really on the program by popular demand.
Oh.
You know, I always ask my listeners to suggest writers that they want me to interview. You know, I interview a lot so many of the best-selling authors who come out of New York and on their book tours and up at the studios in New York. But I always ask, my listeners, who would you like me to interview? And I try to get them on. And other than J.K. Rowling's, which I am usually successful, but I don't think I'm going to get her on. But, you know, I can live in hope.
That's right.
So
you never know.
Someone... very nicely, and her name is Kathy. And Kathy wrote to me, and she said, well, you know, I would really like to know what happened to RJ Keller because I really like her book.
And, well, thank you, Kathy.
I did not know. And she added in her email that she looked you up, and she was checking on Amazon to see if a new book was out, and she checked and on. You weren't on Wikipedia, and she wrote in your name, rjkeller.com, and your website was up for sale, and so she thought something happened to you. And she was worried about you. Well, knowing that not everybody gets a .com website, I did a little more investigation, and of course discovered that you're rjkeller.org.
It is.
And, you know, so half the people don't even understand anything other than .com. So, you know, that's one of the things I always, when I meet new writers, I say, have you registered your website? Because if you haven't, you won't get it. So,
exactly.
Yeah, but you are there and you are fine. And
yes, I'm alive and well.
Yeah. And so Kathy, who is listening in today, can be very happy to know that because, you know, it's always so impressive when, a reader remembers a book, remembers the author's name if they're not really, really, really famous. You know, if you read a Mary Higgins Clark book, you remember Mary Higgins Clark. But a lot of people read a lot of books, especially, you know, people who really enjoy reading, but they don't always remember the author's name and they have to, you know, check it out. But this, you know, but Kathy was very worried about you. And
well, actually,
that's
a really good feeling. Not that she was worried, and, you know, I hope to...
But that she cared about you, and that your book, which is called Waiting for Spring, meant so much to her, and that she was really, engaged in the whole process of what you were doing and what you were writing and if you were coming out with a new book. Because Waiting for Spring, of course, came out in May 2011.
Yes.
And, you know, for people... some people, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
and it was so, I thought it was so sweet that she, you know, was concerned about you. So of course I started investigating and looking you up and, checking out what you've been doing since then. And we'll talk a little bit first about waiting for spring, because one of the things, of course, I checked at Amazon and I was very impressed with the number of great reviews that you had.
Oh, thank you.
You had some really, really beautiful reviews. People who said that the book meant a great deal to them because the story is about overcoming your past and, you know, living through all sorts of difficulties. And so I think you touched the heart of many people with the book.
Well, thank you. That's a really good feeling. That's actually, you know, what inspires me to write is, you know, knowing that to me, I was a success as an author when the first person, you know, read my book and liked it. And so the fact that it's reached, you know, even more people and, you know, they appreciate it and it's moved them and touched them and meant something to them is, to me, the best part about this gig, to be honest.
Well, it is impressive for an unknown author to have. You have over 100 positive reviews, you know.
Yes.
Really good reviews. Now, so once I saw that, then I said, okay, well, I, for Kathy, I have to read the book and see if I you know, find it interesting and want to talk to the author. And of course I did. And I was hooked. And this is something I often talk about to you know, my listeners who are writing or dreaming of writing. And I say, you know, you have to hook that reader in the first, you know, they say first sentence, but actually the first few pages, if you can hook the reader on those first few pages. And now, luckily too, I bought the book on Kindle because it's a hefty book.
It is, yes. A friend of mine said that it could probably double as a murder weapon. So it's not a small one.
No, it's not. So I was happy that Kindle is fantastic. You know,
yes.
Everything's there and it's not very heavy. As a matter of fact, I had the Kindle then when I got it. Now I got the Glow Nook, which I think is even better because you can read late at night.
Yes.
And I just love that. So now you did exactly what I said in the first page. You captured the reader. And let's talk a little bit about the story and tell us about your lead character, Tess Dyer.
Oh, sure. Tess Dyer, poor Tess. she is a 34-year-old woman, recently divorced, as the book begins. She's been married to basically her childhood friend, and the marriage is over. And so she's sort of a pariah in her town, and she decides to sort of leave it all behind and start fresh in a smaller town where I think she sort of hopes to hide away and to sort of, you know, leave her demons behind. And of course, you know, reality is different. You know, our demons follow us because they live inside of us. They're not external. Most of them are internal. So, of course, she ends up struggling with the same issues and encounters a bunch of new ones because of her, you know, the town she moves to, as many small towns in Maine, has a bad drug problem, rampant unemployment, and so she runs into all the difficulties that would be expected in that kind of atmosphere.
And you do capture, you capture the small town environment, and having never been to Maine, I found, you know, your description of Maine and what it was like very, very good.
Oh, thank you. That was actually, it was really important to me because I find that, you know, you read a lot of books about Maine that are written by people who, you know, who visit. And so, you know, they're going to talk about the coast, which, you know, is gorgeous, and, you know, the seafood and, you know, the more well-to-do type of people. And most of Maine is not like that. It's, you know, small towns. We are, you know, our economy has been bad for a very long time. It used to be, you know, dependent on factories and mills. And of course, that industry has left the state over 20 years ago. And so what's left behind are people who used to work those kind of jobs and were able to support their families. And now you've got a generation or two who, you know, there's not a lot for them to do. And that's when you get the drug problems and, you know, domestic violence and all of that sort of thing. And so, and I mean, I love my state. We've been struggling for a long time, though. So that's sort of what I wanted to capture. But at the same time, you know, Mainers are resilient. And so I wanted to capture that as well.
And so the story of you know, the story has a lot of, I'm going to say, you have a lot of character. Well, with a book this size, you better have a lot of characters. I mean, like,
yes. Yeah,
you do have a lot of characters you draw upon and to really set the tone of the story. How did you feel about, you know, Tess herself? What are her qualities that, were you drawn to writing about her?
Well, I feel Tess sort of represents a lot of, you know, a lot of times in the book itself, I speak about New England reticence. It's very common up here. You know, you've got a whole head and heart full of words and feelings and difficulties, and then what comes out of your mouth is, yeah, I'm fine. And so I really wanted to capture that with her personally. If you're reading, you know, the book and she's the narrator and inside of your head, you know what's going on. She's an artist. She's got all these complex feelings. But if you're looking at her from the outside, you're getting none of that. And so it's almost like a feeling of digging. So I'm the opposite of that. I blabber all the time. You know, if it's in my head, it's out of my mouth. And so I've always been sort of, you know, intrigued by that type of personality. And so I wanted to sort of get into the mind of someone like that. And that's where Tess came from.
And she's a complex character. I mean, she's
yes.
An artist, as you said, but she's also, she was a cleaning lady and, you know, she's got a full, complete life there that you've built.
Yes. Yeah, and she, you know, she has her, you know, issues from childhood, and like we all do, I suppose. And yeah, and she, I think what I liked, you know, exploring about her most is, you know, she's an artist, and that's such an important part of her life. But you know, she hides it. She doesn't, you know, when she signs her painting, she does it illegibly. So if someone were to encounter it, they wouldn't know it's her. So even though she is able to express herself like that, at the same time, you know, she still wants to keep a lot of that hidden.
And her all of her sort of inner struggles brings me back to the, as I was talking about, the first two pages of your book. And I want everyone to really think about, you know, if they want a little treat to, and they're not sure they want to read the book, if they read the first few pages, which I know are available on Amazon, tell us a little bit about the, you started it off about, with the story of a nun, and this,
yeah.
a wonderful little story that I think is very, well, carried throughout, you know, the book. So tell us about the hippie nun.
Yeah, sure. The it's a prologue where you sort of get a backstory with Tess, and you sort of get into, you know, her psyche at a very early age. And she speaks about when she was 7 and she went to catechism classes and met the hippie nun, Sister Patricia. And of course, you know, looking at it as an adult, you see, you know, Sister Patricia was trying to help Tess to come out of her shell a little bit. And so she was telling a parable of the sower and the seeds. And the whole point of the story was, you know, children's hearts are, you know, soft and malleable and able to love. And Tess, because of her background, takes it as the opposite. In fact, she says, you know, that's the story that ruined my life. Because even at the age of 7, she feels like, you know, her heart or her soul is, you know, really hard and not able to be loved. And so I sort of wanted to put, you know, the readers immediately into, you know, Tess's psyche to sort of you know, I hope what they get is, oh my God, this poor kid, and then just sort of take that feeling along with the rest of the story.
Well, I realized that you had a special voice, a special talent when I read about what you wrote about crayons. And I think forevermore, I will look at crayons in a different light because of you. And I love that.
Great.
When you know, when you introduce something so simple and it's something that will last. Anybody who reads this will remember it forever.
Oh, thank you. Yes. It's so funny because I'm not an artist. I barely do stick figures, but I've always loved to color, I'm so glad that's sort of a thing that adults are, you know, socially able to do now. But, oh my gosh, I loved my crayon box when I was a kid. And then growing up, I would watch Bob Ross on PBS, which is where I got all the, you know, name colors from that Tess then uses. And I love colors and names of colors. I think probably my dream job would be, you know, naming lipstick colors because I just, you know, find it so fascinating. So I gave that fascination to Tef.
Well, it is a beautiful passage. And I can see why Kathy was sort of struck by your writing. And it's just stayed in her mind since 2011. You know, this is now, as I said, quite a few years later. And yes. It's still, you know, it was just 2 months ago that she contacted me. And I love that. I go to reading fests, and I go to a lot of places where authors are signing their books. And I always try to talk to the people who are standing in line, you know, because I want to know, why do you like this writer? Why do you like this author? So when a reader finds somebody who touches their heart, and just keep, they don't forget it. You've done something amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
And so now what we're going to do is get to the fact that, okay, that was a long time ago. And of course, I was so happy to find out that you are actually working on, I hope, a new book. And
I am, yes.
You know, it's always, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing that you have a gap sometimes, and sometimes in those gaps you have the great learning experience. There are so many writers today, and I understand the problem that a writer today is told you have to do a book a year or two books a year, simply because the publishers want you out there that often. But that can sometimes have a serious downside in that the quality is not always there.
Agreed.
And and then of course sometimes authors are like, they're so stressed out about it, they take shortcuts. And I was just I have a lawyer who comes on to my program once a month to give legal advice, and I call him the writer's legal. And so I was just telling him the story of I discovered in sort of our process that a writer who was so desperate to have a lot of books on was just copying books and putting her name on. But you get suspicious when you have 75 books in 3 years. So
yeah, that's a little bit much.
even the most dedicated writer, I don't think can do that. So
no.
You know, and I'm sure that's that I know that there were some problems in your life during those intervening years. But how's the new book coming?
Actually, it's coming along really well. I did have some difficulty. First of all, I think you'd call it the sophomore slump. The sophomore slump, where everything I wrote, I just felt was horrible, was going to be bad. And because when I was writing Waiting for Spring, I mean, I think every author has that sort of dream in the back of their mind that, oh, yay, this is going to be published and people are going to love it. But as I was writing it, I was just writing it to do it because I loved writing. And so after, you know, it was a very mild success, but it was, you know, of the first book, writing the second one, it feels different because as I was writing, I could imagine people reading it. And that's really, you know, scary sometimes. But I finally got through, you know, a pretty decent draft of it and sent it off to a friend of mine who's an editor. and she read it and said, okay, this is good, but unfortunately it's an awful lot like, you know, another book that's already out there. And she, you know, explained why. And it was a book I had never read. But as soon as she explained why, and I sort of looked the book up and saw, you know, the structure of it, I said, yeah, that's a little too close for me. So that was about a year ago. So since then, I've been working on just sort of revamping the book and, you know, rewriting it from a completely different narrator and a different point of view and a different style. So that's been very challenging. Wow. Because I'm taking a book that was already written and then almost like taking apart a puzzle and putting it back together again, but with different pieces, which doesn't make any sense. But anyway, but it's been good. And it's, I would say it's almost done. As far as, you know, the draft that I'm willing to show an editor. So it's on its way.
Well, I'm sure Kathy will be happy to hear that. And I want to talk more about that. And I want to talk to you about coffee and pie and Twitters and a lot of other things. I have to take a quick commercial break. And then as soon as I come back, we'll talk a lot. Okay?
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay, hold on.
Talking rare until we get till this computer unfreezes. You can go ahead.
Am I back with?
Yes. Sorry about that. It just froze up on me.
Okay.
Laptop or lightning computer here.
Okay. RJ, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. We had a technical. You know, this is Florida is the lightning capital of the world, and
right.
And we had a lightning strike that blew our computer there. It was something awful.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yikes. Anyway, I don't mind. I'm back because I have had my coffee this morning. I hope you've had your coffee this morning.
I have.
You have. So, as I was saying when I was checking you out, I went to your website and I did a little digging and I found out that you like coffee. And
yes.
So anybody who likes coffee and pie is my kind of person.
Awesome.
So is it true that you're asking people to bring pie to book signings?
Well, I do because I love pie, but I can't bake a pie crust. I mean, my pie crusts always come out so bad. And so I feel if anyone can bake a pie and is happy to do that, I will gladly accept it.
Well, I think that's a fantastic thing. Good idea. Good idea. I'm going to come to one of your book signings. I'll help you.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay. What's your favorite kind of pie?
Strawberry rhubarb.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I come from Northern Michigan. And and so that was a favorite pie up there because of course we grew the most wonderful strawberries. We had a short growing season in Northern Michigan, but boy our strawberries were delicious.
Oh, yum.
So, yeah, that was always a favorite. So, now when you I was looking at your reviews. I want to go back to that for a minute. Of course, one of the comments, as I said, you had so many wonderful reviews. Of the negative reviews, and that there were a few, and it was primarily about the language that you were
Correct.
you used a little bit strong language. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult thing for a writer today to decide how far to go with language.
Yeah. A lot of those reviews, a lot of people, you know, assume, oh, you do that to sell books or whatever. I did it to sound authentic. If you were to go into any of these small towns, that's how, you know, they talk. That's how we talk, which I don't know that it's necessarily something I'm proud of, but that's, you know, reality. And also the place that my characters, you know, Brian and Tess, the two main characters are at in their lives, there's a lot of frustration and they're not able to deal with or talk about. And I find that that's a lot of times how those feelings are released is by profanity. And I actually was very deliberate about it. During the times of the most stress, that's when they had the most profanity. When things were, you know, calm and collected, there's hardly any. And so it was a deliberate choice but not to shock or, you know, or to sell books or whatever. It was basically just because I wanted it to be authentic.
Well, and it, and in this case, of course, you know, Tess is very, let's say, addicted to sex, or
I think that's fair.
interested in sex, to put it mildly. And so some of the language, I mean, it's appropriate for the subject matter.
Right. Yeah. And and she uses it as a coping mechanism too, when she doesn't want to, you know, deal with anything, and which is a lot. So, but yeah, I, like I said, I really wanted to make sure it was authentic and that it felt authentic. And so that's, you know, how I wrote it.
Well, it does sound authentic. That's for sure. And, you know, I think sometimes it's, if you look at the reviews and it's simply people who write that, well, I don't like the bad language. It's because they would write that about anybody's book. It's not
correct.
It's not, know, you could be the top best selling author in the world, and you'll always find somebody. I mean, there'll always be some people who will object to language. And I, as a matter of fact, I was recently reviewing a young adult book, and the author used maybe two or three words that of course kids in high school are using all the time. I mean, like,
right?
Nonstop. But he used it in the book, and I felt so awful for him because he got so many bad reviews. I mean, you know, one star. Oh, the language was bad, and he only used the word three times, and it was a character who would use that language, you know. And I felt so bad. I thought, because he's a young writer and he's just starting off, and I thought, oh wow, he must have been devastated, you know,
to see so many.
You know, it's my opinion that if you get to a book where you see that you don't like the language like that, you could, you know, and you see a few people have reviewed it that way, that's enough. You don't have to add. You know.
Oh, I totally agree. And I know, you know, with my book, for example, you know, as you mentioned, there are a lot of reviews that mention the language. Before I buy a book, I read the reviews. And so if I'm a person who doesn't like, you know, rough language in a book, and I see that the reviews say that there's rough language, I'm not going to buy it. So, I mean, I personally, that's not my problem. I don't mind, you know, rough language. But I don't know. It might sound a little cynical, but, you know, the more recent ones that talk about the language, I can't really feel bad for them because they were definitely warned.
Exactly. I agree. Now, I think we can take a break.
We're going to give us another try.
Hey, Bobby. Bobby's in the control room today, and he's going to take a break, and then we'll be right back, okay?
Wonderful. Thanks.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hi. I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvick, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side, on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0000. 800-288-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
This is the Tam Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, R.J. Keller, who first book called Waiting for Spring came out several years ago, a little over 5 years ago, and she's working on her second book. And RJ is here because of one of my listeners, Kathy. And hi, Kathy. Special thanks to you for, you know, suggesting to me that I talk to RJ Keller because I was so happy. I'm always happy to find new authors, someone I've missed along the way. And I wasn't doing this program in 2011. So I missed you. And I'm so happy that I have now discovered you. Hi, RJ.
Well, I am too. Hi.
Well, you know, this has happened quite a few times where a listener will send me a name, and I was so happy. I recently interviewed another writer, Neil Litherland. Again, a listener had sent me his name. He writes sci-fi and steampunk, and so I was really happy to get these suggestions from listeners. So if you're a listener out there and you have an author that you really admire, someone that's touched your life, touched your heart, send me the name at patsy.radio.com, and I will invite them on because I love finding new writers.
And writers like to be found.
They do. And so as we were talking about, you are now working on your second book. Do you have a title for it yet?
I don't, no. Still working on that. Usually, with Waiting for Spring, the title was the very last thing, so it'll probably be like that with this one.
You'll be inspired at the last minute there. You'll say, "Oh, I have just the right title,"
yes, and it's not going to be procrastination inspiration.
Yeah, it's not going to be Bring Me Some Pie.
No.
Although you might write a main cookbook called Bring Me Some Pie.
No, that's a great idea.
You know, really, and then you will get those pies. So,
right.
I don't
have to make that book number three.
That I've never seen a Maine cookbook, so I'm sure you have some good food up there.
Oh, definitely.
So there's another little task for you. You know, in your spare time, you have some spare time there.
Oh yeah, tons of it.
So what keeps you busy?
Oh, actually, this time of year, gardening, and of course, I do have a day job, so that keeps me very busy. And I have three kids who are in college, and two of them are home for the summer, so they definitely keep me busy.
But you're continuing on with your work and get this second book out. And
yes.
One of the things, of course, you have been promoting Waiting for Spring during this period. You haven't given up trying to get it out there, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I don't feel like there's a shelf life on books. So I have absolutely.
Well, that's exactly. You know, it's so wonderful now with the internet that people can buy books that, you know, were published. That's one of the things I love to do is talk to people whose books were published quite a while ago, and
right.
They're still available. And it's so wonderful that readers have this opportunity, you know, so a book isn't forgotten. So what
exactly.
Do you do to promote your books? Your book.
Well, I do a lot of online promotion. I have a Facebook account I'm very active on. I would like to say I'm active on Twitter, but I haven't been a whole lot lately. But the last couple of years, actually, I've been doing the circuit in Maine mostly, but also some of the other northern New England states, book signings, which I love that. I love getting to meet new readers or existing readers and just talking to them. I think that's probably one of my favorite things.
Well, I think one of the things I know I did an event where there were a lot of romance writers, and I talked to the people in line who were there and to get selfies with the authors.
Yeah.
And that is a wonderful, wonderful thing because one selfie can go out to, you know, it just multiplies and multiplies because readers are always so happy to have a selfie with an author. So they send it to their friends and they send it to their friends. So from one selfie, you can get some really great advertising.
Definitely. With Instagram and everything else, it's, You never know the reach.
Exactly. And of course, to build up the number of people on your, are you saving up an email list?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
This is very important for writers.
Definitely.
I've been talking to quite a few writers recently because we started a book nook for local authors here in town so that they would have a place where they could put their books. And one of the things I discovered is that many of them did not understand that they should be getting, building up their mailing list. And of course, you are very, very successful in getting wonderful reviews on Amazon. And that's so important to have the number of reviews that you have and the great reviews that you have. And people really don't care about those reviews about naughty language. Get over it.
I actually think sometimes they end up selling the book, to be honest. So.
Well, yeah. Exactly. It can be a positive. And to have a very active Facebook and Twitter, do you have a lot of likes and followers?
Yeah. Yep. And I think it's important to, when you're doing that, it can't be all about, selling the book, promoting the book. I'm a writer, so that's where my skill set is. So I feel like Facebook and Twitter, I'm not going to just say, hey, buy my book. Here's my book. I'm just going to write about things. And if, I find that a lot of people after they've, read some of my posts or my tweets and, they're amused or intrigued, then that's what's going to think, maybe she can actually write a book too. And I find that that works better than the actual overt promotion. So that's how I tend to do that.
Exactly. That's what they're advising now. Of course, a big deal is to have a platform. And one of the things that you have to do is to have this Facebook presence and to have the Twitter presence. And, you have to make it interesting.
Right.
And it's funny that even some really, famous writers, they struggle with it because they say, well, I don't do anything interesting in my normal life. I put everything interesting in the books and I just get up in the morning and brush my teeth and have my coffee and start writing. And that's what I do all day. So,
right.
So,
well, sometimes there's funny things about, drinking your coffee and brushing your teeth or just your observations on whatever. I feel like that's our job. I mean, as a writer, my job is to make brushing my teeth sound interesting to people. That's what I have to say about that.
and you're doing a pretty good job because I noticed you have quite a few Twitter followers. I haven't checked out.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Yet. And it's wonderful when people connect with you like that.
Yeah, it is. And I do. I like interacting with people. I know a lot of writers are introverts. I suppose I can understand that, but I like talking with people. And so I think it's a little easier if you sort of are naturally extroverted or a little more outgoing than if you're introverted.
And your next book, it's again going to be a story about overcoming problems and...
Yes, actually, it's a companion to Waiting for Spring. I would not call it a sequel. It actually takes one of the events that happens sort of, off page, so to speak, and it sort of focuses on that. And I don't want to say too much because it's sort of a spoiler for Waiting for Spring, but it does revolve around Brian, one of my main characters, around his father and something that happens to him and that directly affects Brian and Tess in Waiting for Spring, but you don't see it happen. So that's what this book is dealing with.
Well, in your book, you make Maine sound so, it's so realistic that it's hard to understand that the towns you in the story are made up, right?
Yes.
But based on towns that you know about.
Yeah, they're definitely, I would say each town I've made up is, I don't know that it's based on, one or two towns. It's sort of an amalgam of my experiences in living in many small towns. So I think that's how I would say that. Cause I hesitated to use any actual real towns because, small towns means a few people and you don't want people to think you're writing about them. So that could be awkward.
Yeah. Like the old Peyton Place,
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And then everybody gets mad at you. But so you can always, say, oh, no, I didn't mean you. I didn't mean you.
Completely made that up.
Yeah. So when you're not writing, what is this thing about videos? What are you doing with videos?
Oh, my friend, author Kristen Tetsi, and I, for several years, it's been a while since we put one out, but we have a YouTube channel. It's called Inside the Writer's Studio, is what the name of the show is. Our sort of name as videographers, we call ourselves Paper Rats. And we've got quite a few videos we've made, just little episodes. We call it writer-centric videos. They're mostly amusing. I think that the smallest one's 2 minutes, the longest one's 7. Basically, we make fun of ourselves. We make fun of the writing life. And it's been so much fun. But the two of us now, you know, we have our day jobs that are just taking so much of our time. I think it's been about 2 years since we put out a new one. But there are several videos there, and I think they're funny. So hopefully, you know, other people do too.
And people can see them, and they can also find out more about you at your website?
Yes. My website is rjkeller.org, .com. And there's actually a couple of links on my website, too, where you can find the videos and other little tidbits as well.
Well, I think they're going to have to come out with a dot something for authors, because they have a dot TV for TV and dot, I don't know, you know. And really, it's impossible now to get the .com for most writers unless you have a very unusual name.
Yes.
You know, Rumpelstiltskin Keller would work. Right. Then you could get .com. But they've so blocked all the names. Some industrious companies went in and just did, you know, computer generated. Let's generate every single name we can think of with every single middle initial. And they hold it hostage, really, and you have to buy it if you want it. And it really is annoying.
It really is.
I think it's, I don't like that. And that's, I'm really surprised that they didn't come out really early on, because there are so many writers and
I think you're onto something there, like .book, but something like that.
Well, something like that,
really,
because it really is hard for writers to, poor Kathy there is thinking, oh, she dropped dead. Her website's gone. Her website's gone. I said, no, or worse, she's gone bankrupt. She can't pay for the website.
Exactly.
I have to, right away, as soon as I found it, I sent an email to Kathy. I said, no, she's got a website. She's there.
Oh, well, thank you. I feel better now.
She's just an organization. Kathy. She's turned herself into an organization.
And That's right.
And she's an organized woman who gets up every morning and, does the dishes and cleans the house.
Absolutely.
And then spends 10 hours writing, and she's really... That's why she has to be an organization. I mean,
exactly.
So it's funny, but I'm really grateful to Kathy to keeping you in mind all this time, and to that she's looking forward to your book. So when you do come out with your book, you have to come back on.
Definitely will, and I think I'll have to send Kathy a free signed copy.
Oh, absolutely. She deserves it, because
definitely.
When you find fans like this who have really been touched by your work, I think that's the greatest compliment a writer can have. And
it absolutely is.
And something that you can hold precious and look at all your, also while you're looking at all your 5-star reviews, which you have a lot of. And I think that you're a marvelous writer, as I said.
Well, thank you.
I hope that my listeners will go and get, it's Waiting for Spring. It's a long book. I will tell people it's a long book, but it's well worth the read and the time. And, we're here in Florida. We have long days here in Florida. It's, daylight until 9 o'clock. So there's no reason you're not out there reading. And And I think that once they do, once they start your book, as I said, because I as a matter of fact, I will use the first two pages of your book as an example when I go to these readers' conferences and meetings that I attend about how to in the prologue, how to capture, how to capture a reader. And
well, thank you.
I'm going to be going to one in September, and I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'm going to actually, you know, show it up on the first page up on a PowerPoint and tell people about it, because I think it just, it grabs the reader, which is what you want, and it can inspire writers to really work on that first page.
Well, I appreciate that. I don't mind that at all. Thank you. That's a big compliment.
Well,
thank you.
As I said, I'm just so pleased that I got to speak to you today, and I'm looking forward to when the new book comes out. I don't want you have to email me so that I don't have to check Amazon every day.
Right, I will definitely do that. I'll keep you posted.
There's Kathy checking every few weeks to see if you come out.
Poor Kathy.
So just stay in contact, and I'm just so happy that I spoke to you, and enjoy the warm weather and the gardening up there. I'm sure you get a lot of wonderful things up there at this time of the year. So thank you so much, RJ Keller, for joining me today. And we look forward to talking to you in a few months, 6 months or something like that, when your new book comes out.
Sounds great. Thank you. I look forward to it, too.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye.
That was fun. I really enjoyed talking to RJ. As I have said many times to many writers, it is important that you, if you are a writer, register your name. And if you have a common name, like Sally Jones, even, you know, SallyJones.com is taken, but do SallyJones-book.com so that people can find you, because it is a problem. And it's a growing problem as we get more and more people and more writers. And people are like, there are people who are just either, I don't know, they just never look at anything but .com. So it's just funny. I when I explain to somebody that there are other endings other than .gov, which they might be familiar with because of the IRS, they don't know about other dots. So keep it in mind if you're a writer. And of course, as part of what you have to do when you are working on your entire platform, which is, of course, registering your name, registering your Facebook, registering your Twitter. I am not on Instagram yet. I suppose I should be registering my Instagram. But it's one of the things as a writer that nowadays you have to do. And it's something that you have to think about. So even if you're just dreaming of writing and you haven't started writing, I suggest you do that. And as I was telling RJ, we have now the Book Nook at Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. And it's part of Miami Avenue Wine Bar, Music and the Arts. And the owner there, Bev Malley, is a great supporter of our local authors. And we have so many fantastic local authors. And the books are now available there. And the store is open from 11 to 5 every day. I think until 11 to 5 every day. And it's just a fantastic place to drop in, to meet the owner, and to look at the books from local authors. Famous authors such as Angela Hunt, who wrote the novelization for the movie Risen. Her book is there, and a wonderful selection of cozy mysteries by Carol J. Perry. She writes the Witch City Mysteries. Her books are fantastic. And for everyone who's interested in the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel, which they are in the process of tearing down, the books that Bansu Brandvik has written that are based on the hotel and sort of preserve the memory of the hotel are fantastic reads. And her books are available at the Book Nook. So take yourself down to the Miami Avenue whether you go in the daytime or in the evenings. On the weekends, it's a fantastic place to go because they have live music. And tonight is Tuesday, and it's karaoke night. So if you like to sing, head over to Miami Avenue. It's in Indian Rocks, just two blocks south of the post office. Now, I would also like to remind you again that Bill Larson, the Writers Legal Eagle, will be here on Thursday. And there are so many legal questions that, again, writers have to be aware of these situations. And as you saw that RJ is rewriting her book because it was similar to something else and something that she had never even read. But you never know if you are going to get sued by somebody. So you have to always be thinking about that too. And it's, you know, it's a wonderful process where you can lock yourself in your ivory tower and write. But then when you come down, sometimes you have to face all the sort of nitty gritty of everyday life, which is partly legal, partly business. A writer has to be a lot of things these days. It's not enough to just find a publisher, which is in itself another thing to do. So, and I would also like to remind you, it's the end of the month, which means on the first of the month, Irene Goodman is putting up for auction two critiques. If you are a writer and you want some really, truly professional advice on your writing, Irene Goodman is one of the top agents in New York City. And these critiques that she offers for auction are really fantastic. She will take your work, she will read it, and she will analyze it, and she will tell you exactly what she thinks about it, and give you helpful suggestions where you should go, how you should, if you need to improve it, or where you should go to sell it, and where you should go to find an agent. So it's well worth the money, and the money goes to charity anyway, so that's also well worth it. And it's a professional review, which is something you really need. You can't just base your work on the review of your family. You have to get out there and get a professional review. Anyway, that's Patsy with a Z giving you some good advice. And have a great night tonight. And come back here on Thursday at 11 o'clock. Bye for now.
WTAN, Clearwater, Tampa Bay. WDCF, Dade City, Tampa Bay. WZHR, Zephyr Hills, Tampa Bay. Listen.